You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. I'm here today with Luke Cowarth, who is here to talk about his sight loss story. Hi Luke, how are you? Thank you for coming on to RNIB Connect Radio.
Not a problem, Jennifer. Thank you for having me as usual.
Can you tell me when you began to lose your sight and how you felt?
Wow, do we have all day? No. So when I was 27, I was in a car accident which caused me to lose my sight. I wasn't wearing my seatbelt, basically, and I don't know what happens. I don't remember, but basically I went through the windscreen at 70 miles an hour and I rolled 40 yards onto the floor where my brain was exposed. The collision when I hit the windscreen caused my brain trauma, apparently, and then I broke 11 bones in the right-hand side of my body. I had a stroke, but they couldn't determine whether I had a stroke before or after the accident. My lungs were just collapsing just as the ambulance got to me. And I was in a coma for 3 months and then hospital for another 6 doing rehabilitation. And when I woke up from the coma, I was high on drugs. And my mum just said, oh, you were just spaced out most of the time. And when you were coming round, you didn't know what was going on. You just didn't have a clue. I do remember some hallucinations that I was having. I thought I was on Pirates of the Caribbean. That were a good one. Others were in like some Disney films. I thought my friends were Disney characters and things. So that was actually the positive side of it. When the ophthalmologist told me that I'd never get my sight back, that was just absolutely devastating. I actually coming out of that room when she told me that my eyes wouldn't be repaired, I actually just closed the door, slid down it and just cried. And my mum had to drag me out of the hospital, basically. It was just so upsetting just to be told at 27 that you're no longer going to be able to see. It's absolutely devastating and quite moving, really. So how did it make me feel? It was very traumatic.
I can imagine. When you lost your sight, did you get any support to come to terms with this?
Yes, but I put a lot of the support in the place myself. So I've always been very proactive in whatever happens in my life. And in this situation, the consultant who registered me told me that any other support that I needed would come from having a result of a certificate of visual impairment. I waited for the CVI, it didn't come. I blagged my mum. Mum, where is it? Mum, where is it? Mum, where is it? She couldn't tell me, so she actually rang up the consultant, and the consultant secretary said that she didn't process the CVI, so it had gone into my file without anybody having it. So then we got a copy of it in the post. And from that, then I rang up basically everyone that I could. I rang up the RNIB. I rang up social services. I rang up every single charity in the area that had anything to do with sight loss to see who could help me and what was out there and what to do. Because my vision at the time, it was fluctuating. It wasn't steady, if you will, because it had come from a brain bleed, basically, the trauma. So my eyes, my brain was still adjusting. So what the result was is that I had no vision in one eye and about 8% vision in the peripheral, in the top right-hand corner of my right eye, which is still there today. So I can't see anything clearly at all. Couldn't even read a 24 font that's right in front of my face. But I can see shapes and shadows. So with the right contrast, I can make the most of my vision, basically. And yeah, so the support services I kind of put in place myself and the rehabilitation officers back then. So this was 2015. She was a local lady. Luckily, the county council gave me her mobile number and I rung her and she did me appointment like the next week because she knew we were waiting for a certificate. I was really, really lucky back then. I got the stuff pretty much straight away and she went through everything. Even though you get the support services, the emotional side of it, you don't deal with that when you're in the go mode. You have to wait for the emotions to catch up with you, is what I'd say to that question.
What hobbies and interests do you have despite being visually impaired?
The hobbies that I used to have was travelling, going abroad all the time, riding, used to horse ride, used to play tennis as well. I forgot about that moment 10 years ago. But now my hobbies are going for long walks because I never thought I'd be able to walk. I never wanted to walk. I never liked walking. I used to drive everywhere. But obviously I can no longer drive. So walking becomes your new hobby. And obviously that becomes exercise, releases endorphins. I love doing yoga now. And horse riding I could do if I wanted. But travelling is still a big thing of mine. And yeah, I do go travelling quite a lot on my own to different places. I always go to places that I've been before so that I know the layouts of it. And I have friends over in Greece where I used to live. The hobbies have changed, but I still do the things that I really want to do.
Can you tell me a bit about setting up your own business and what inspired you to do so?
Wow, that's a long one. Talking about the emotions earlier, what I didn't tell you. So the consultants had told me that I weren't going to get my sight back. I was still in hospital at that time and had all the nurses around me and had all the support. And can you do that? You know, can you ring this person? Can you do that? And it was easy because I had a team around me and, you know, they all supported me. But then I went to live on my own and that's when the emotions come in. I never dealt with emotions really because I didn't know what they were. I was a young man, 27, never grieved for anybody in my life, my grandma, my family, my friends. No one had ever died at that point. And when people were around, it was okay, could still be me. But then when they went, I was on my own, and that's when all these emotions started to come in, and the loss of independence was volcanic. It was just so lonely, and I felt so isolated. And the more I felt that, the more I stayed in that zone, and I didn't want to go out, and I didn't want to socialise. So then I turned to drink, because drinking a bit of vodka now and again made me feel better. And yeah, it was getting to the point where I was probably going down the alcoholic route. I was a bit drunk one Christmas and I swore in front of my grandma. And I love and respect my grandma so much that I would never swear in front of her. And I woke up the next day after I'd done it and I thought, right, Luke, you've got a problem. You need to sort yourself out. So I stopped drinking because obviously substances don't help with your emotions. And I got my emotions in check. I spoke to friends. I spoke to various different people. And accepted it really, because it was always that I wouldn't accept it because I probably felt bad for it happening, felt bad for what my family had gone through, and felt guilty about myself for not being able to stop my eyesight going like it did, I suppose, on some level. Oh, you're making me think now. So I went and did that. And then 2 years after, I thought, right, I was coming out of it, got the emotion sorted, and then thought, right, what do I want to do? So I went to go and work for a charity, Sightline Vision Northwest, it was called at the time, ran them volunteers. And that was a great, great service, increased that service by 300% in the end. But that introduced me to the sight loss sector. I learned that there was nothing that's impossible. You just have to think of things a different way. And that's my mantra. Just because you cannot see properly, there is nothing that is impossible. You just have to find a different way around it. Yeah, you may be able to not see as well as you could do, maybe not be able to see at all, but you can still do the things and enjoy the things that you wanted to, that you used to be able to when you did have sight, but nothing is impossible. So then wanted to help people at the start of the sight loss journey. So I trained to be an eye clinic liaison officer at the time, which are now called eye care liaison officers. So I went to Leeds and worked in the Leeds Trust, which was fantastic. We had 36 consultants working together, registrars, and used to train them all on CV, certificates of visual impairment, and then supporting people at that point of diagnosis. Because although I got the support, I didn't get the emotional support at the time. But then that was me not wanting to get that support, if that makes sense, because I didn't know what emotions I would be feeling and I wasn't emotionally adept at that time. So I wanted to make sure that anyone that had been through suicide, because that's what I did, tried to commit suicide on two occasions during the 2 years that I was not in a good place. I don't want anyone else to feel like that. So if I can get people at the start of their sight loss journey, then instill in them that there's nothing that they cannot do, they just have to find a different way to do it, and these are all the organisations and services out there to help you, then that can stop all that mental depression and all that negative thoughts, because it's all about positive mental attitude. So yeah, I went to be an ECLO for a bit. Then COVID hit and we adapted the services around there with the optometry team, who were absolutely fantastic. I still do work with them now. They're great. Then I was a trustee at the local society and then I ended up being service manager down there, adapted the services and working with the universities around there to help people with low vision. I trained in low vision and optometry, and I'm now qualified to deliver what's called continuous professional development to optometrists and dispensing opticians throughout England. So that's a nice string to my bow. And what got me was that all the areas that I'd worked in Leeds, I'd worked throughout the northeast and throughout the northwest, because Leeds was like the main hub hospital, so you could have people from anywhere in the north coming to you. It's just a postcode lottery on where you live and what services you get. For example, you could get so much different optical aids within the Leeds Trust if you lived in Leeds. But had you been out of there, like been in a different area, you wouldn't get half them optical aids, because you maybe go down to a high street optician and then they'd maybe just give you a magnifier if they had it in stock. So it's very different, is the support services that you get. Another one is assistive technology. They don't have anyone that they can turn to show them how to use an iPhone or show them how to use an Android. It's very infuriates me, if I'm honest. So I decided to do a service based on the ECLO stuff that I've done, based on the low vision. and based on the stuff that I'd done with the rehabilitation officers. Just want to clarify, I am not a qualified rehabilitation officer. However, I am a qualified ECLO and low vision specialist up to a certain degree. Therefore, I've kind of developed an elite assessment, if you will, that can support people throughout their sight loss journey. But mostly it's the mental health and emotional stuff that I can really make a difference on and have done throughout my career. Just changing that person's mindset at the point of diagnosis. That's how I started my own business, because I wanted to be my own, but I wanted to make sure that everyone within the north of England had the support services or the opportunity to get the support services that they deserve.
If anyone wanted to learn more about your business or even get in touch, how can they do this?
My business is called Vision with Luke. It's got its own website, www.visionwithluke.co.uk. You can email me, luke@visionwithluke.co.uk. And also you can call me on 07496 902749. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn. The only thing I want to do is just support as many people as possible, really. But yeah, if anyone ever wanted to contact me to see what I can offer to them, a phone call costs nothing, so I just pick up the phone and I'll see if I can support you on some level or give you the advice.
Thank you so much, Luke, for coming on to RNIB Connect Radio today.
You're very welcome. It's been nice talking to you, Jennifer.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.